sacrifices are being made in the Granite State today. Welcome to the Party Line Podcast. My name is Colin Booth, Communications Director at the NHTP, and I'm here with your host, New Hampshire Democratic Party Chair, Ray Buckley.
Hey, Granite Staters, and welcome to another episode of the New Hampshire Party Line Podcast, hosted by yours truly, me. This week, we have a very important guest joining us, Chair of the Democratic Victory Campaign Committee, Representative Laura Talerski of Nashua. Representative Talerski has just secured her fourth election victory in a row, and we cannot wait to ask her all about it.
It's absolutely true. But first, updates to the NHTP. Chairman, can you tell us a little about what's happening at the party?
A little? I can go on for hours. We've got our state convention coming up on Saturday, September 30th. We've got an incredible special guest, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. It seems like every damn day he's announcing some new extraordinary effort.
Good.
He makes Chris Sununu look like a plop of poop.
Absolute.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. So for more information about the convention, which is going to be held at Bedford High School on Saturday, September 30th, and we think you'd like to be there, just go onto our website at nhcp.org.
That convention is going to be a great time. I know personally that reporters from across the nation are going to be there. So
really? Who from California? You said across the nation. That would include California.
I didn't say every state in the nation. I said
across. Okay. Who from the West Coast is coming? How's that?
Okay. Off the top of my head. All right.
We are not hyperbolic here.
Yeah. We've never done that once.
We're very serious.
Yeah. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be in every major news publication in the country. It's going to be a great event. Yeah. But folks better get their tickets before they sell out because...
Because so many people are like, wait a minute. We thought the DNC said that the New Hampshire Democratic Party is persona non grata.
Yeah.
And how did they get a top shelf person like Josh Shapiro?
How did they get a tier one?
Tier one A.
Right. A tier one A. How did they get a tier one A? Well... Can we say, folks, it's,
To quote Mark Twain, stories of our demise.
Greatly exaggerated.
Exactly.
All right. Well, moving on. Political news in the Granite State and beyond. Chairman, last week was an incredible week for New Hampshire Democrats. Representative-elect Hal Rafter.
Say that again.
Representative-elect. Hal Rafter.
Excellent.
Won the special election in Rockingham 1, the towns of Northwood and Nottingham, flipping the seat from Republican control in this district, which Trump narrowly won in 2020, in an 18-point swing to Democrats.
Pretty cool, huh?
18-point swing Democrats in the special election. This marks 8 victories in the national... in the last 9 special elections here in New Hampshire, an incredible record of success for these special elections, bringing us so close to tying the House for control. So much credit to the DVCC for this one. Republicans, understandably, are losing their minds.
Are losing what's left of their
what's
minds.
Left of their puny gray matter and devouring each other on social media over this win.
Which is delicious to
which
watch.
Which is so, so nice to watch. Almost immediately after the results came out, you saw bottom feeders from the DeSantis camp, like Representative Ross Berry, people who are truly charged with winning these elections in the first place, leaders in the House.
Isn't he chair of the Republican campaign committee?
You know,
I believe he is.
And instead of...
Wasn't he the one that gerrymandered the crap out of the state of New Hampshire? I believe he is.
Yeah. I think he is. I think he gave himself every possible advantage and put himself in a position to make this happen.
And he failed.
And not only did he fail, he ran from accountability, absolutely sprinted away from it, and instead maneuvered to a self-helping kind of line of spin where he is blaming Trumpism and Donald Trump. Donald Trump was not on the ballot. This candidate was not really framed as a Trump acolyte in any way.
And let's remember, Ross Perry is the state director of DeSantis's super PAC.
Right.
So, I mean, this is typical.
It's so typical. You know, Chairman, the NHGOP and the Committee to Elect House Republicans, CTEHR, they put all their eggs in their basket. I mean, they haven't touched any of the other specials, yeah, but really.
The problem is their eggs are rotten.
They got rotten eggs. They just got some rotten eggs.
There's nothing that smells worse than rotten eggs.
Look, these guys put everything they had into
tens of thousands of dollars.
Tens of thousands. They had out-of-state spending, I think, $40,000.
In just the closing week?
In the closing
crazy.
Week. Yeah. They had money.
It's got to be humiliating to be a Republican. It's got to be.
On my worst day, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Look, I mean, this was a 50, you know, a really close district. This was a Republican district. This was a Republican who held the seat before. And look, these Republicans, they lost massively here. What does this say about the future of the Republican Party here in New Hampshire?
Well, it says a lot. But what's even more interesting is how people are adding that into what's happening across the country. Because on the same night as Hal Rafter, we won a special election in Pennsylvania, flipping the Pennsylvania House of Representatives to Democratic control for the first time in a while. And it is happening across the country, which bodes very well for 2024, which bodes very badly for the NHGOP, because this election in 2024 is going to be decisive on whether or not it'll be the first time since 2014 that Chris Sununu is not on the ballot.
Yeah.
And he is the only Republican that's been able to win statewide in the last.
He's the anchor for all their and hopes
without,
and dreams.
Without him on the ballot, is it not funny? The fact that, you know, he's been on the ballot and he's really just caused just enough voters to kind of flip over so the Republicans stay alive.
Yeah.
But his endorsement means nothing.
Nothing. Kiss of death, as it is known. The kiss of death endorsement.
When we found out that he had sent out a mailer, the first thing I was like, okay, we're going to win. He is unbelievably unlucky when it comes to endorsement. Now,
unlucky, or I mean, is it something more?
I don't know, but I tell you, you know, our folks, there. When you let's just say, there's a thought process that goes into whether or not they endorse folks.
And he waited till the last minute because. Yeah. He didn't want his name near this absolutely toxic candidate. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really much of a public endorsement either. It was just a mail. Mm-hmm. It was a piece of mail that went out to the district. So trying to keep it as quiet as possible, but an endorsement nonetheless.
It is.
And
it is.
You got to think, in his office, it's kind of got to be an inside joke. If he's not in on it, his staffers definitely are. Every time they got to talk about one of these endorsements now. You know, it's almost like, do you warn the people that are asking for the endorsement? Like, look, well, yeah, maybe, but I don't know if you've heard about how this is going to go down.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, that is an incredible week. But, you know, last week, kind of tied to this, we also saw Ron DeSantis slide into fifth place here in New Hampshire, according to a poll out of UNH.
And it was a devastating
poll. I mean, the shrinkage.
I guess.
was unbelievable.
Okay, we'll move on from that line. But you know, Ross Perry once again. So he makes his money working for DeSantis.
Yeah.
And he takes the leadership role in the House to run. So he just crapped double in one week.
I mean,
double crap.
It's just an absolute cratering.
Yeah.
I mean, why? I mean, it's not just Ross Perry. Let's be honest. It's Jason Osborne too. Because Jason Osborne is, you know, majority leader in the House for the Republicans. And also has a major leadership role on the DeSantis campaign. So this is, and these two people are really at the top of, you know, they're working the levers of Republican power in the state. And they're losing all the time. Why do they have jobs? Who is giving them the authority?
Okay, so this is what you really need to think of. Okay, here are these two dinghies. And the fact that the Republicans keep them in those positions means there's nobody better. Now, if that doesn't give you comfort.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah. You know, so it's like when you're just rock bottom and you look around like, crap, there's nobody that can do this better than those two who are doing it horribly.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whew. Okay.
Well, let's talk about Manchester.
Come on. As long as we're talking about winning. Of course, Representative-elect Rafter wasn't the only winner last week in Manchester. Democrat Kevin Kavanaugh moving forward to the general election against Republican carpetbagger Jay Ruse.
Now, it's important to explain that it's a nonpartisan election. So everybody is in this primary. Right. So you got three Democrats. Yeah. In the nonpartisan in the sense that everyone votes at one time in one one spot. It's not it's not like the Democrats are on one ballot and the Republicans are on the other ballot. This is everyone together. Uh-huh. So you have 100% of the voters and you got three Democrats running and they total 59% and you got the Republican totals at 41%. Now, Manchester, I know it's hard for people to believe, is actually split right down the middle when it comes to voter registration and a lot of voting patterns. Yeah. It should have been Jay Ruiz or whatever at 51%, and then the Democrats, if he was to spin, that he had momentum.
Right.
But when you're down 18 points, buddy, you ain't got no momentum.
You got no momentum.
Ain't got no momentum. No, he's got about as much momentum as his mentor and boss of a decade, Frank Kinta, does for his future, too.
You know, it's... And here's the thing. He's not. I mean, he moved here for this race, right? I mean, he came from
just D.C. like Frank Ginta.
Yeah,
Frank Ginta filed for the New Hampshire House in 2000, and he had just moved to New Hampshire less than a year and a half earlier.
Yeah,
and he then stayed in office from being a state rep to being an alderman to being mayor to running for Congress. There was this even vote, and then he crashed and burned because we found out who he really was.
Ah, yes,
and. What is so the exposure of Frank Ginta's corrupt behavior trickled out for years, but throughout it all, Jay Ruiz stood by it. He was either the chief of staff or campaign manager over and over and over with Frank Ginta. So this is a guy who seems to be cool with the behavior that virtually nobody else does. When the union leader endorses your opponent in the Republican primary, you're a sitting member of Congress, you know you got some problems.
Yeah,
but there was Jay waving that Ginta sign.
You know, and you know, you come up in an upbringing like that. You get raised professionally in an environment where standards and morals are lax, and you really got to wonder who is this person and what are they about. And I think voters got a pretty good idea of it, and I think the numbers reflect that.
You know? And I really wanted to hatch up. Not only did Kevin Kavanaugh run a great campaign, but so didn't the other two Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. And, very clean, very good-spirited. June Trisciani, Will Stewart, class acts. Absolutely outstanding folks. And it really, I mean, it makes you feel really good about the bench, right?
Yep.
I mean, I would have been happy if any of these people had won. I think they're all incredibly talented. I think they're all incredibly smart.
I think at some point they all three of them will be mayor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and they all ran really good campaigns. I mean, it was very competitive.
Yeah.
Hats off.
I don't know anyone that felt very sure of what they believed the result was going to be. I mean, this was very competitive.
Finally, last week, we saw Representative Troy Murner of Coos County resign from the House in abject disgrace following an investigation by the Attorney General's office. Murner had been serving in both the State House and as a member of the Lancaster Board of Selectmen. But investigators concluded Murner no longer lives in the district he represents.
And hadn't.
And hasn't. Even before he was elected, he knowingly
ran for office illegally
in the wrong district. Knowingly ran the audacity
of their arrogance. I mean, it's just something to behold.
I think you really captured it in the Boston Globe story about it. When I think you said something like, Republicans in New Hampshire are going to give up on democracy before they give up on power.
Well, but the interesting thing is that the person who actually filed the complaint with the Attorney General was a Republican colleague of his.
You know,
somebody that sits on a town board and just knew that it was not right.
Someone with a conscience. Yeah.
I'm going to nominate her for the JFK Profiles and Courage Award next year. Because it takes a lot for a Republican to stand up against.
It does, you know, and it sounded like she was, in the reporting I read, sounds like she was conflicted about it to a certain extent, and I get that.
And it gives Laura Chalersky one more victory to have. I can't wait till we say it's 7-7.
I mean, it's got to be hard to for a district to look at the party that just betrayed them and broke the law and said, I just imagine how I would feel if, even if it was someone in the same party, they moved out of the district and they tried to keep their job like that.
For a year?
I mean, knowingly running.
It wasn't like it's a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's just such a scumbag move. It's just a slimy, and it's like, you don't live here, you don't represent the people of the district. You don't know what our troubles are because you don't live here.
Well, the AG's question about whether or not he can be charged for stealing public funds because he took the mileage checks from a residence he doesn't live in.
A lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think the bigger one that people are just starting to ask, the untold number of bills that could have been affected by this representative's potentially illegal vote. I mean, so many bills were right on the margin of one vote. The House is split, you know, almost down the middle.
How do we untangle it? So here's this guy, obviously in the wrong.
Yeah.
Obviously should never have gone through this. But who advises? Well, you know, probably spoke to the majority leader. Who's the Republican majority leader?
Oh, you know what? It's Jason Osborne again.
And, you know, if he wasn't able to get through to the majority leader, probably talk to the chair of their election committee because that's somebody that would advise him. And who would that be?
Election committee is...
Was that Ross Berry?
Oh, it's Ross Berry. That's right. The guy who drew those gerrymandered maps.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So the stain on New Hampshire body politic that Ross and Jason have created gives us gifts by the day.
Yeah, if it was a carpet, you'd have to throw it out, the stain. I mean, come on. It's just, wow. What a crew. I'll tell you what, a banner week for the New Hampshire Dems. And in a different way, last week was a banner week for New Hampshire Republicans. I gotta say, a new profound low in quality, in performance, and in results.
Well, let's end it all by making sure that we elect a solid Democratic majority in the House next time. And so that's what's going to be really interesting as we're hearing the next up, our interview with Representative Laura Chalersky. Joining us today, we have the incredible New Hampshire state rep and chair of the House Democrats campaign committee called the DVCC, Laura Chalersky of Nashua. The DVCC is the organization charged with winning elections for House Democrats here in New Hampshire. And this week, Representative Tulerski and her team secured the fourth special election for the DVCC since the beginning of her tenure with the organization, with the election of Hal Rafter in the battleground district of Rockingham County Number 1, the towns of Northwood and Nottingham, and as a result, is now getting immense national attention. Representative Tulerski is in her third term in the New Hampshire House from Nashua's Ward 8. She serves on the House Finance Committee. Representative Tulerski, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Can you share with us some of the key moments or experiences that kind of triggered you to get involved in the community and in politics? And how did that journey start as your now career in public service?
I did go to school thinking I was going to get involved with politics, and then my life took a different path. After having my second child, my husband and I couldn't afford childcare, which is sort of a theme we continue to hear these days. So we decided I would stay home with my kids, and I did that and raised my three kids and threw myself into volunteering with our local schools and getting involved in the community. And then once my kids were teenagers and heading off to school, I was trying to find my place in the world and figuring out what I was going to do. And one day, it was just after the Charlottesville incident with Nazis marching in the street, it occurred to me that I couldn't sit back and do nothing anymore and just wait for this time to go by with the Trump presidency. And one of my kids asked me if I would go to a Nashua Democratic City Committee meeting with them. And so I told them I was not going to volunteer or get involved, but I would go with them. And about 3 months later, my name was on the ballot as a selectman. And that was in 2017. So here I am serving my third term in the State House.
Well, excellent. And obviously, we're looking forward to the next term when Democrats have control of the House. So let's talk a little bit about your role as chair of the DVCC, or the House Democrats Victory Campaign Committee. Talk a little bit about your role and how you became the chair of such a important organization.
So looking back, we were still in the middle of COVID, meeting in Bedford, big sports complexes, and now leader Wilhelm was chairing the DVCC and looking to build out the team of representatives who would jump in and try to do the work, and approached me about what I could do to contribute as the recruitment chair. And I knew nothing about what that would entail or what I would be doing, but he persisted, and eventually I agreed to head recruitment efforts for the DVCC for the 2022 cycle, and sort of jumped in that way. Lots of conversations and meetings with county chairs, town chairs, teaching them how to recruit, how to find those active, engaged citizens, and trying to identify strong candidates. So after my stint with recruitment, I thought that after the filing period, my work was done. We filed nearly a record number of candidates that June, but somehow they kept calling me and giving me tasks to do, and kept me coming back and helping the staff. And then we had such a great performance in November. We lost the majority by 11 votes. I knew that there was more
work to do. Explain what that means.
Well, we finished the November 2022 election, and we lost the majority by, God, it's gone back and forth so many times at this point, but we had one tie, which was eventually won by Chuck Grassley. And I think we were down one or two other seats. But when you add up the difference of how many votes were needed for us to win the majority, it was 11 votes between Chuck Grassley's tie in Rochester and then the next two or three seats.
And that's in spite of the fact that more voters went to the polls in November 22 and voted for Democrats for the New Hampshire House and voted for Republicans. But because of the way they've got it gerrymandered, that those votes didn't necessarily count.
Right. So, you know, it's the districts in New Hampshire are really unique and different. We have, you know, one-to-one districts where you have one person in, representing a direct, you know, 3,500 people. You have multi-member districts. You have floatarial districts. You know, when you go to a town like Bedford or Merrimack, it's town-wide. So you have to vote for like the top seven or vote for the top eight. It's really hard to break through some of these towns. But, you know, when you communicate to people that we lost the majority by 11 votes, you think about those conversations you could have had, the doors you could have knocked, the people you could have convinced, the neighbor you could have brought to the polls with you that day. And that's what I try to communicate to people as we go into every single special election, is it really comes down to those, you know, one-on-one conversations. And you look at Chuck Grassley's race in Rochester. He tied. I mean, it was crazy that you could think a race could tie. And then in December, when the House first convened, we were under the impression we were going to have the voters of Rochester decide. It came to light that there was going to be a move to try to seat the Republican candidate that day. Luckily, we were able to have enough people on the Republican side to join us, a small handful, to say that's not right. The people of Rochester should decide. So we move forward into 2023 with an election do-over, let's say, in Rochester. We hit the ground running and made sure that the town of Rochester knew how important this election was. And I'm lucky to say Chuck Grassley is back in our caucus and doing good work.
So without getting into specifics, what if I was a person just off the street, decided, I want to get involved too because I was irked by something Trump did. What does the DVCC do to help elect people in a very general sense without letting any Republican listening know your secrets?
Yeah, so the DVCC is primarily focused on recruiting and training and assisting Democrats who want to run for the New Hampshire House. So we have good relationships with the local town committees and the county committees. And first off, I would say, if you don't know how you can help, I would say you need to go online and find out when your town committee meets and start to get involved and meet people that way. But what we like to do is really have those conversations in advance with potential candidates so that they understand what it is they're getting into when they say, I think I want to run for the New Hampshire House. That was sort of almost entirely what I was doing as recruitment chair, is I would have these conversations with people so they could understand what the workload was. You know, as you know, it's for the most part a volunteer job. We get paid $100 a year. And I had many conversations with people who had no idea that it was that situation. You know, people think we get paid the big bucks, and that is obviously not the truth. But simply having these conversations about what they could bring to the legislative process and sort of giving them like the frequently asked questions on what it means to serve, how it affects your work schedule, how it affects your community and your family, and making sure that we can find really strong candidates who can step in, but also who are willing to do the work to win. You know, it's no longer a given that you just put your name on the ballot and hope other people do the work. This is all about what a candidate can do, you know, to raise the necessary money, to get the literature, and then do the work to get out and speak to the voters and win. But I also have try to communicate that not everyone in the New Hampshire House is, you know, a legal-minded expert. They're not all coming up with the best new law that's going to change the world. There's lots of different places in our caucus for all kinds of people. You know, there are people who've been working on these issues, as you well know, for decades. You know, there are experts in gun violence protection, prevention. There are experts in reproductive health, you know, and I'm not saying that new reps can't, you know, come in and get involved with that. They most definitely can. However, you don't need to be, you know, an award-winning community activist to step in and make a difference. There are a lot of reps I know who have never filed a piece of legislation, and that's okay because they show up to committee, they show up to house sessions. Everyone has a talent. Some people are talented at asking really good questions in committees and digging into bills and getting the details and finding the weaknesses. Other people are really good at managing others and organizing and pulling people together who can actually be effective. And other people are really good at speaking from the well. Not everyone goes up and speaks from the well and is really good at it. Some people never go up to the well, and that's okay. We have a very broad, diversified family in our caucus, and there are many places for people to fit.
So you've been intimately involved now in all these elections, and there's always a great story that comes out of one or two of them. What's your great story out of the previous, over the last year of canvassing or doing something that just was extraordinarily memorable?
You know, in the Rochester election, it was really interesting getting on the doors and, you know, it was the middle of winter. And these people had just voted. They're not used to hearing there's an election that's going to happen in February. I don't remember. I think it was February 23rd. And they were sort of tired of us because we kept on them, you know, because you have to have the conversation, you know. First of all, it's tied. You have to explain what happened. Then you have to explain why it's so important. And then you had to remind them to get out and vote. And one of the best things that I saw was the weekend before the election for the Get Out the Vote weekend, where we're just trying to remind people it's happening. I was with a colleague of mine, Representative Will Darby from Nashua. And we're knocking doors and we go up to a door and they had every single piece of mail taped to the storm door and a sign that said, "Thanks so much, but we're good and we'll be voting for Chuck Grassley." So, I mean, it saved us a knock, and but it told us that we'd done the work and gotten it out. Now, sort of similarly, the other night, Tuesday night in Northwood, I was standing at the polls and a woman came out from voting and she came over and said to us, you know, I grew up with Hal Rafter over in Nottingham. And I had no idea that this was happening. And someone knocked on her door and told her what the story was. And she said, you know, I hear all the time, well, I don't get involved with local elections or state level elections. And she said that. I usually don't get involved with these kinds of elections. But she said, you know, I don't want people in my reproductive decisions, and she sort of made a funny gesture down to her nether regions and said, but I know Hal, I know he's a good guy, and I knew this was important. So it's that kind of affirmation of hearing that we've connected with the voters and we've pushed them out of their comfort zone to get out and vote and make a difference.
So there have been 9 special elections since the 2020 results came in November of 2020, and Democrats have won 8 of them. And so far this term, since you took over, it's been 4 for 4, with 3 more heading towards the batting stations. What is interesting is the diversity of where they're from. You know, you've had one completed in Nashville with another one coming up in November. We just have an opening come up in the Gorham, Shelburne, Randolph district up just south of Berlin. And then vacancy just as of Monday with Lancaster, Dalton, Groveton, and Stratford. And then over in Grafton County, Enfield, and then, as we were talking about, the Rochester seat and the Northwood Nottingham. Are there different strategies for these different sort of districts? Some are inner city wards, and others are have immense land, like the Lancaster district will be pretty sizable. The idea of going door to door in January in Lancaster is interesting.
Yeah. So I'd say Rochester and Nashua were obviously very similar. You could park your car and you could get out and walk and, you know, take a walk and go door to door and have the conversations. The Nashua election is a very unique neighborhood. It's one of the most diverse communities in the state of, different backgrounds of people, of a wide range of income levels. And there's a lot of transient people in terms of like they're renters. They move in, they move out, lots of more high density housing. So that's a little more difficult to connect with who actually is registered to vote and get that message across. Now, on the other side of the coin was Enfield and Northwood Nottingham, which is completely different. The very first time I went to knock doors in Northwood, I was wearing open sandals and I was, ready to do my old thing. And people looked at me and said, "What are you thinking? You can't canvass in Northwood in those kinds of shoes." Well, I soon figured out what they were talking about. We had gravel, dirt roads, one single vehicle width. Driveways and roads and, these old roads full of camps on the lakes that my car doesn't know what hit it. But you can't park your car and go and knock your door. So we were really lucky in Northwood, because Northwood and Nottingham, because we had a team of volunteers who were drivers, and they were local people who knew the roads. And, canvassing is one of the hardest things I think I've had to learn to do with this new role in my life. Canvassing is not easy. You're putting yourself out there. You're knocking on a door of a stranger. They don't know you. You don't know them. You don't know what you're going to be faced with when that door opens. But you get used to it. I'm now, it's something you just sort of, it's a skill you learn. But it's scary for people. And there were a lot of people who wanted to help with this election. And we were able to say, great, we need drivers. And we had a great group of people who showed up, 2-3 days a week, ready to drive with their GPS. They knew the roads and they would help us get out and get through the community and talk to people. So we definitely have to adapt to where we are. I'll be honest with you. The first thing I did when I saw those resignations was pull up Google Maps and figure out what we're talking about here. I must say, I don't think I've ever been to either of these districts, so it'll be interesting to get up there. But I'm really excited about the possibility and both of those have not yet been called for by the local community. One of them is a little bit more blue-leaning, and the other one is more red-leaning. So it should be interesting to see what happens once things fall into place, if the communities call for a special.
Great. And, you talked about heading up the recruitment effort for 2022, but still, obviously, as head of the DVCC, you'll be involved in recruitment for 24. One of the challenges for New Hampshire Democrats, as we've been turning more blue, is that for many decades, Democrats were just desperate to put names on the ballot, that with the hope that we would get 120, 130 in the House caucus. And then we've had to change our philosophy, and that it's not really about just putting your name on the ballot now. It's about, can you serve? Yes. Or will you canvass and actually work to get elected? Because you can get elected. And it's an entirely different conversation. So my times recruiting were back in the old days. So how do you convince
these people that are in these swing districts that the importance of serving in the House and the importance of campaigning and them specifically asking people to vote for them for the commitment that they've got to show up, because if there's ever been a term where attendance has been needed, and presumably we'll probably have a small majority after the 2024 election. So it's still going to be very dependent on turnout.
Right. So, you know, part of when I am recruiting people, when I started in 2018, there was still a good cohort of, let me call them experienced legislators in the Nashua delegation that I learned from. But a lot of these people, you know, had been winning election after election because their name was well known, you know, and some of these people would Xerox a little sheet about themselves with some bullet points and either mail it to people or, you know, just use that and to say, you know what, it really is a good idea to raise some money, get some higher quality literature, you know, get signs, you know, I mean, the sort of the gold standard is, do you have a web page or some kind of social media presence? You know, because the voters these days, that's what they're demanding. Just the other day in Nashua, I was at the primary. There was a for our special election in Nashua was the primary, and I was with our Democratic candidate, Paige Boschman. Someone was pulling out after voting, and I waved and said, make sure you text all your friends and tell them to come vote. And she said, well, none of my friends know who Paige is. And I said, can I give you photographs of her literature to share? And she said, well, but they don't know her. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what else can we do here? You know, what are we going to do? People, Democrats in particular, need to have this face-to-face conversations. I know this person in the community. I know who they are. So, you know, to jump ahead, we are going to be scheduling a meet and greet, and I will be calling this voter to say, would you host something at your house for Paige? But, you know, we've entered a new level of campaigning in terms of messaging who you are and communicating with voters, but we're still stuck in this old school, there's a group of people who, you know, need to meet you and have a conversation with you. So we're trying to bridge that gap of when we're recruiting people, can you do both? You know, people hate to say, oh, I can't raise money, or I don't want to raise money. Well, you know what? I hate to say it, but it doesn't cost that much to run a really good election here in New Hampshire. And so we're trying to encourage people to do that. But you have to do the work, and you can't just put your name on the ballot and expect other people to do the work anymore. You know, Hal Rafter, who was, you know, had a huge win last Tuesday, lost in November by like 20, 25 votes. I don't remember. But again, if you had just done that work and had those conversations, not saying Hal didn't, because, you know, this election, the special had a totally different spin on it. If he had the support of the larger community and volunteers, you know, just think of what we could do. We could definitely take more seats and hold the majority. And I'm hoping that with all these specials, having the DVCC and our amazing staff go in, training the volunteers, teaching them how to fundraise, teaching them how to do the work, what we're doing is building this base in the local town committees so that they are ready to go for November 24. And this is like plug and play. They're going to know who their supporters are, who to reach out to. This has also been a great opportunity for identifying potential candidates. I'd be in Northwood and have a conversation with someone and I'd say, oh, have you ever thought about running? And you have to have that mindset that every single person you speak to is a potential candidate and say, have you ever thought about it? What do you do? How can you give back? And is being a state rep a good fit for you?
Well, I think that's a great place to end. Thank you so much for joining us, Representative Laura Tillerski from Nashua.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Party Line Podcast, brought to you by the New Hampshire Democratic Party.